Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating. This is installment number 9 in The Art. And tonight, the show is about consensus decision making. But before we go there, please remember, if you have questions and comments, write them in to Zach@kepw.org, and I will try and answer those questions or share those comments during the next show. And visit the website at dynskills, that's dyneskills.com. Get copies of the podcast, books, ebooks, trainings, workshops, other material that may help you to integrate and to internalize the concepts and skills we need to relate positively and effectively. I want us to get grounded together because we should be grounded, centered, relaxed, touched with the earth, strong, having free will before we interact with anyone. And I'm interacting with you now, so I always ground at the beginning of the show. Remember that ground comes before process or content. And what that means is if my spouse says, for example, let's talk about something, I say, hold on, as a matter of habit, ground myself, even if I already feel fairly relaxed to begin with. And then I connect with her. How I connect with her is process. And then we can talk about whatever the issue is and use that process and stay grounded while we talk. And if we don't stay grounded while we talk, we should pause the interaction and take a moment to ground before we continue. That's the habit we'd like to develop. So ground with me now if you can. Remember, first step is the bottom half of your body. That's what connects you to the ground. Your feet are about a shoulder's length apart. Your toes are pointed forward. Your hips and knees are unlocked for flexibility and to let energy through. Your legs are what connect you to the earth. That's your base. And you want to connect to that base. And connect that base to the ground. So set your bottom half. If you're sitting, just having your rear solidly connected to the chair and your feet flat on the ground is the same kind of base, and that'll work too. Step two is the top half of your body. You want to be relaxed so that, again, energy flows, but you also want to be up and centered and strong, not aggressive, but reasonably assertive and considerate, as we talked about last week. So put yourself in a posture, in a position that's relaxed but strong, open, attached to the earth, centered. Step three is take a couple of grounding breaths deep in your gut. A lot of people, you say take a deep breath, they breathe into their chest, but nothing gets into their gut. You have to drop your diaphragm, expand both chambers, stomach and chest, and then let it all go. So bottom half, top half, take a couple of breaths, shake out the kinks, make sure nothing's too tight where you normally hold tension in your forehead or in the back of your neck or in your chest or wherever you hold your shoulders, wherever you hold tension, your hands, shake it out a little bit. So eventually, bottom half, top half, couple of deep breaths, shake it out. All kind of happens together. And then remember the things you say in your head, and we suggest relax, affirm, and unhook. So I hear myself say when I ground, chill out, calm down, couple of relaxers. I'm doing the best I can, I'm a good person, I have value, couple of affirmations. And finally, unhook, which means let go. Make it all small. Remember, something that's something is not absolutely big or small. It's all a matter of perspective. So when you're, say, your light awareness, you're 14 billion years old, you're living in a million galaxies, then the issues of one incarnation on the Earth all tend to become small. They still count. I still have to work through them. I still have to have feelings about them. I still have to care about them. But if I make it small, I can unhook. I can step out of that, what I call the ego movie, and just be the soul for a minute. And that allows you to be calm and help you be centered and help you be empathetic and caring. So you reach the state that I call grounded. It's where you want to start from. It's where we'll start from now. Oh, and as part of my hello, I'm Zach Schwartz, and I'm a psychologist, but we're not here to do psychotherapy or counseling, not on the radio. We're here to learn a system together, which I find effective in helping people relate in a more positive, more efficient, more successful way. I call it effective humanistic interaction skills, and that's what the art of relating is about. So, tonight, like I said, we're going to talk about consensus. It's a system for a group of two or more to make decisions, to resolve situations, to find solutions, to take care of each other. And consensus is based on a horizontal preference in social structure. The way groups operate, you can operate fascistically, which is one person at the top making all decisions. That can be efficient, but usually causes all kinds of authority and power difficulties, and only one mind, only one world, only one set of maps is the basis for the decisions that are made. Everybody else just carries them out. Well, I never responded very well to vertical structures. And I've always supported more horizontal structures. Now, voting, the way we do a lot of things in this country, like Robert's Rules of Order or our general government operations, I call fascism by the majority. Because in a voting system, if you can get a majority on your side, then you're going to get your way on the issue. So it encourages a voting system you to look for the people that agree with you. What you want is 51% or more of positive votes. And once you have that, you can call the question, win the vote, and then the other side, the minority, becomes, you could say, victimized by whatever that decision is. They won't have as much support for it. They'll be angry that they didn't get their way or weren't heard or weren't included. But that's a problem I have with voting systems, better than fascistic, but yet still, I call it fascism by the majority. Now, a consensus system, which I've worked on for the last 40 years, involves equal rights and encourages you to look for the people that you disagree with, not the people you agree with, because you have to talk to them to form a solution that respects them enough that they A, understand it, B, are willing to carry through with it, and C, respects their position enough that they feel like they were included and are more supportive of following through with whatever the decision is. There doesn't need to be a boss. There doesn't need to be a vote. The problem with consensus is that most people don't understand the fine points of how to use it, and that's why I plan to spend this program and maybe the next program sharing some of those fine points, because it takes work. It takes a change of consciousness to understand that everybody's reality counts as much as yours, no more, no less. It takes understanding the process. Often it's important, if you're trying to practice consensus, to have a mediator, someone who really understands how it's supposed to go. It does not mean that everybody agrees. It does not mean that everybody sees something the same way. What it does mean is that we're willing to try to integrate our realities into a solution in a way that deals with the situation and also respects all of the people involved. When I work with couples, I often teach them and work on the integration of what I call dyad consensus, which is basically the same system of consensus decision making for their negotiations, but the group size is only two. When they include a family, more on that later, they add another one or two realities to the mix to do the negotiation. But most couples, both people, tend, when I ask them, to share the value that they are equals. Their household is a two-headed dragon. They need to make decisions that affect both of them as equals. Nobody, one person, is not in charge. Remember, a two-headed dragon has trouble flying in a straight line if the two heads aren't working in some kind of harmony. Consensus decision-making is an attempt to put a process system in place that creates that harmony so that the dragon can function as one. When one person is in charge, some couples go that way and will say, oh, she's in charge, I just obey. But that's simpler because one person decides and the other just carries it out. But that's not where most people are at these days. Most people say we share power as equals. Gender doesn't matter. Cultural background doesn't matter. We should all be treated as equals. So within this couple, the two people are trying to treat each other as equals. Now, when I work with couples or groups on developing this model of negotiating things and communicating things, one thing we discuss is what I call the right to an issue. It's one of the five universal interpersonal rights that we discuss in The Art of Relating. And the right to an issue says that there's an ongoing open agenda between us, and that either of us has the right to put something on the agenda and have it dealt with, have it resolved in a reasonable amount of time. And reasonable amount of time varies from couple to couple, household to household, item to item, but it's something to be considered. If you go to your partner and you say, I'm putting an item on the agenda, the right to an issue says that the partner will say either, okay, what's your issue? I'm grounded and I'm listening. Or they will say, let's set a time that we can both agree to discuss this issue and try and get it resolved. Any other response would seem a violation of the right to an issue. How important it is, whether we talked about it before, that doesn't matter. Something's unresolved, or the person, either of them, wouldn't have put it on the agenda. If it's on the agenda, we're going to deal with it. And all we've got to do is start to interact about it or set a time to interact about it. Now, sometimes one person will say, that's not important, or we already settled it, or I'm not going to talk to you about it. What does the other person do when their right to an issue is violated in that manner? A lot of relationships, partnerships, personal or business, can be made or broken based on the mutual respect for these five rights. And remember, the way you get respect for those five rights is having the power to assert yourself or set a boundary. So if one person says, I have an issue, and the other person says, we're never talking about that, sort of worst possible response, the other person can say, look, the next thing we're going to do together is either discuss that issue or set a reasonable time to discuss that issue. Until then, I'm not interacting about anything. And they have to be independent enough to be able to continue their day without the other person And they also have to have the assumption that they're valuable to the other person, and sooner or later, that person will come around and meet that demand. They kind of have to, unless they're willing to cash the whole relationship in. But again, you've got to bank on the fact that outside of a capital crime in a committed relationship, that's what commitment means. They're not going anywhere because you set that limit. And after whatever period of time, and that varies a lot, that person will talk about the issue or set a time to do so. So I help couples to establish this understanding and application of the right to an issue. Having this agenda and putting things on it and having them dealt with is sort of a first step in the consensus process. Now, once we reach the discussion, the next issue is making sure that we have a pause button so that either person can stop the process to get grounded or to clarify, but they really don't need a reason. They can always call for neutral corners, take a pause, and come back to the process as soon as they're both grounded and ready to do so. And depending on the charges, emotional charges in the issues, pauses can happen frequently. But it's better to pause and ground and clarify and come back centered than it is to try and force the content when one or the other person is getting buttons pushed or is not grounded, because usually that confuses the outcome, doesn't turn out well. The next issue is what I call clarifying the question. So, whoever put the agenda item up, that person usually gets to speak first to describe what the issue is. And if possible, turn that issue into a question so that the purpose of the consensus process is to answer that question. And if they can explain or vent or share what the issue is and what the question on the floor is, then if the other person wants to receive that information and make sure they understand it, that's where consideration, see last week's installment, comes in. To empathize, to validate, to reflect, to make perception checks, until both people agree that they both understand the question on the floor. And part of the reason that's important is because our minds are amazingly fast associative computers, and what they do is tangentialize very easily. So we start talking about, where to vacation next summer. And in a second, we're talking about how I resent your mom, or how you hurt me 5 years ago, or what are we doing with the kids? So when you hear that happening, what I call tangentializing, you want to have the question on the floor clear to come back to. And you want to be able to pause for a point of order. Point of orders, remember, are making process adjustments. They're not about the content. If the content is where are we vacationing next summer, the process is how we talk about it. So when someone says point of order, it's like an automatic pause to make an adjustment in the process. It might be, it's my turn to speak, I believe, and you were speaking over me. Or it might be, I think we've gotten off the question on the floor, which happens a lot. So if I hear something else coming up, like we're talking about where to vacation, but suddenly we're talking about how much money we're spending this month, I want to be able to go back to the agenda and say, should we add an item? I'd like to stay on the question of where we vacation. And I know it's related to the budget because the amount of money we have determines to some degree where we're going. It's always related. The tangential item touches the item. That's how I got there, by association. But still, usually it's better to make it a separate item, put it on the agenda as item number two, and then we can talk about things one issue at a time, one question at a time. Things tend to go better that way. So once we've established the question on the floor and we've agreed to that, then the two people, this is dyad consensus, remember, so there's only two, want to share their perceptions, their world, their maps, their ideas, their thoughts about the question on the floor. And they want to be able to get their own perceptions and feelings expressed. They want them understood and heard. And they also want to understand the other person's. And so that's where the stuff we've talked about in the last couple of weeks on assertion, expressing my own, and consideration, caring about the other person's and understanding the other person's, comes into play. So now we're expressing our worlds about the question on the floor. Now, when we're sharing our perspectives with each other, what I call trading realities or trading worlds about the question on the floor, a common mistake that groups or couples make is they jump to solutions too quickly. And I'm not going to be gender prejudiced, but especially the guys tend to do that. Why don't we just do this about the problem? But that's not what this step in the consensus process is about. This step is about sharing thoughts and feelings and opinions and perceptions around it. We're gathering data about each other. We're not up to making proposals or solutions yet. I have to hear and understand all of the realities involved, because if I don't have that information, I'm not really able to make a consensus proposal. So we have to do information gathering on each other as we share. And remember the working assumption. My partner knows herself better than I do. So what she says she feels and what she says she thinks, that's what we're going to go with in the consensus process. Let her represent herself. And I will represent myself. And all we're trying to do at this stage of things is understand and hear each other. And so we take turns sharing our worlds. And it doesn't matter who goes first. So if your partner wants to speak and is ready to share, then great, do that. If not, you can share when ready. But then it's her turn. And then if she says, okay, or I don't want to share, a point of order you could make there is we can't work as equals, and I can't develop a decision or a proposal that is going to respect you and draw your enthusiasm if I don't know what your world looks like about this. So please try and share. Now, I noticed that on some issues, one person or the other really doesn't care. They're open to their partner taking control of that question and answering that question, and they can live with whatever. And in that case, if that's really true, it's okay to abdicate. It's okay, let's go with your world and just do it your way, because I don't care that much. Like for me, for example, I remember my spouse coming to me one night and showing me a book of 50 different kinds of white lace fabric. And we were going to have white lace curtains in our living room and dining room. And she said, the question on the floor is, which one of these kinds of lace do you think we should go with? And I said, do you want the truth or do you want to lie? And she said, of course I want the truth. And I said, this 50-page book of lace designs could be one page to me. I really can't tell them apart, and I don't care which one we use. So you're free to pick. And if you want to save some time, I said there's probably one of those that costs more than the others, and you'll probably end up with that one. So just pick it out and buy it now. And she started laughing, and she said, well, there is one I like a little more, but it does cost a little more. And I said, oh, show me that one. And I said, oh, this one is, $12 a yard, and this one is $3 a yard. And how are they different? And she said, don't you see the little crescent moons in the corner, et cetera, et cetera, which is a level of detail I would never notice. And so, again, she was free to pick whichever, and I was fine with that. Don't need to work through an entire consensus to do that. It's only on the issues that we both find matter to us where we need to talk it through. And whether it matters to my partner or not is entirely up to her. If she says, I have something, I care about this and I want to be heard about this and I want to be in on this decision, then of course that's what we're going to do. And then we continue to share our worlds, and that's the step we're up to. So remember, we both got to be grounded. We have to respect the right to an issue. We have to remember a pause button is in place. We have to define the question and be clear about it. And then we have to begin to exchange worlds so that we can understand each other about that question. And that's where all those communication skills, reflecting, empathizing, validating, perception checking, all become important and useful tools during that stage. To hear someone's world about an issue and not argue with it, and not have to attack it and not discount it, and understand it in their terms. And what I mean by that is my wife doesn't use language the same way that I do. I tend to speak more literally and more directly. She tends to use metaphor more and speak more intuitively and emotionally. And that's fine. It's no worse or better than my way of doing things or using language. It's her way, and I have to learn her way if I'm going to understand her, which is one of the values of this, as you respect and you're able to achieve that kind of understanding. You grow in the process. I begin to understand metaphor and intuition and emotion more as I appreciate and listen to her. So, next week, we're going to continue this discussion of consensus, because there's plenty more to talk about. And remember, call in with questions at zach@kepw.org and visit the website at dynskills.com. So have a great week. Consider this first part of understanding consensus. And come back next week for part two of this discussion.